about them that you all don't. What's that? Someone shouted from the crowd. That their fair singer, Sandra Hennessy, has a birthday today. And it's not just any birthday.
I'll get you for this, a woman's voice rang out. You just see if I don't, John Martin.
Sandra is turning 40 today. I think she needs a birthday dirge. What do y'all think?
The crowd erupted into applause that quickly settled into anticipatory silence.
Happy birthday,
he sang the minor notes of the opening of the Volga Boatman in a gloriously deep bass that needed no mic to carry over the crowd, then hit the boron once with a small, double-headed mallet. Thump!
It's your birthday. Thump! Gloom and doom and dark despair. People dying everywhere. Happy birthday. Thump! It's your birthday.
Then the rest of the room, including Samuel, started to sing the mournful tune with great cheer. There were well over 100 people in the room, and most of them were professional musicians. The whole restaurant vibrated like a tuning fork as they managed to turn this silly song into a choral piece. Once the music started, it didn't stop. Instruments came out to join the boron, guitars, banjos, a violin, and a pair of Irish penny whistles. As soon as one song finished, someone stood up and started another, with the crowd falling in on the chorus. Austin had a fine tenor. Tim couldn't sing on pitch if his life depended upon it, but there were enough people singing that it didn't matter. I sang until our pizza arrived, then I ate while everyone else sang. Finally, I got up to refill my soda, and by the time I returned, Samuel had borrowed a guitar and was at the far end of the room leading a rousing chorus of a ribald drinking song. The only one left at our table was Tim.
We've been deserted, he said. Your Dr. Cornick was summoned to play, and Austin's gone out to the car to get his guitar.
I nodded. Once you get him singing, I waved vaguely to indicate Samuel, you're in it for a while.
Are the two of you dating?
He asked, rolling the Parmesan jar between his hands before setting it down. I turned to look at Samuel, who was singing a verse alone. His fingers flew on the neck of the borrowed guitar, and there was a wide grin on his face. Yes, I said, though we weren't really, and wouldn't now. It was less complicated just to say yes, rather than explain our situation.
He's a very good musician,
Tim said. Then, his voice so quiet I knew I wasn't supposed to hear him, he murmured,
Some people have all the luck.
I turned back to him and said, What was that?
Austin's a pretty good guitarist, too, he said quickly. He tried to teach me, but I'm all thumbs.
He smiled like it didn't matter, but the skin around his eyes was taut with bitterness and envy. How interesting, I thought. How could I use this to pry information from him? I know how you feel, I confided, sipping my pop. I was practically raised with Samuel, except that Samuel had been an adult several times over. I can plunk a bit on the piano if someone forces me. I can even sing on key, but no matter how hard I work at it... Not very. I could never sound as good as Samuel, and he never even had to practice. I let a sharp note linger in my voice, a twin to the jealousy he'd revealed. Everything is so easy for that man. Z had told me not to help him. Uncle Mike told me to stay out of it. But then, I'd never been very good at listening to orders. Ask anyone. Tim looked at me, and I saw him register me as a real person for the first time.
Exactly, he said,
and he was mine. I asked him where he'd learned Welsh, and he visibly expanded as he answered. Like a lot of people who didn't have many friends, his social skills were a little lacking, but he was smart, and under all that earnest geekiness, funny. Samuel's vast knowledge and charm had made Tim close up and turn into a jerk. With a little encouragement, and maybe the 2 glasses of beer he'd drunk, Tim relaxed and quit trying to impress me. Before I knew it, I found myself forgetting for a while that I had ulterior motives and got into a spirited argument about the tales of King Arthur.
The stories came out of the courts of Eleanor of Aquitaine. They were to teach men how to behave in a civilized fashion, Tim said earnestly.
A caller with more volume than tone on the other side of the room called out, King Louis was a king of France before the Revolution. Sure, I said. Cheat on your husband and your best friend. The only way to find love is through adultery. All good, civilized behavior.
Tim smiled at my quip, but had to wait as the whole room responded, Way Holloway, Holloway Joe. Not that, he said, but the people should strive to better themselves and to do the right thing.
Then he got his head cut off. It spoiled his constitution.
I had to hurry to slip in before the chorus.
Like sleep with your sister and beget your downfall? Way Holloway, Holloway Joe.
He gave a frustrated huff. Arthur's story isn't the only one in the Arthurian cycle, or even the most important. Parsifal, Gawain, and half a dozen others were more popular.
Okay, I said. We were getting our timing down now, and I started to tune out the music completely. I'll give you the urge to do heroic deeds, but the pictures they painted of women were right along the lines the church held. Women lead men astray, and they will betray you as soon as you give them your trust.
He started to say something, but I was in the middle of a thought and didn't pause.
But it's not their fault. That's just what women do as a result of their weaker natures.
I knew better, actually, but it was fun to rant.
That's a simplification, he said hotly. Maybe the popular versions that were retold in the middle 20th century ignore most of the women, but just go and read some of the original authors, like Hartmann van Au or Wolfram von Eschenbach. Their women are real people, not just reflections of the church's ideals.
I'll give you Eschenbach, I conceded. But von Au, no. His Iwane is about a knight who gave up adventuring because he loved his wife, for which he must atone. So he goes out and rescues women to regain his proper manly state. Ugh! You don't see any of his women rescuing themselves.
I waved my hand.
And you can't escape that the central Arthurian story revolves around Arthur, who marries the most beautiful woman in the land. She sleeps with his best friend, thereby ruining the two greatest knights who ever lived and bringing about the downfall of Camelot, just as Eve brought about the downfall of mankind. Robin Hood was much better. Maid Marian saves herself from Sir Guy of Gisborne, then goes out and slays a deer and fools Robin when she disguises herself as a man. He laughed. A low, attractive sound that seemed to take him as much by surprise as it did me.
Okay, I give up. Guinevere was a loser.
His smile slowly died as he looked behind me. Samuel put his hand on my shoulder and leaned close.
Everything all right?
There was a stiffness in his voice that had me turning a little warily to look at him.
I came to rescue you from boredom, he said, but his eyes were on Tim.
Not bored, I assured him with a pat. Go play music. Then he looked at me. Go, I said firmly. Tim's keeping me entertained. I know you don't get much chance to play with other musicians. Go. Samuel had never been the kind of person who put on graphic public displays of affection. So it took me by surprise when he bent over me and gave me an open-mouthed kiss that started out purely for Tim's benefit. It didn't stay there for very long. One thing about living a long time, Samuel told me once, it gave you a lot of time to practice. He smelled like Samuel, clean and fresh, and though he hadn't been back to Montana for a while, he still smelled of home, much better than Tim's cologne. And still. This afternoon, talking to Honey, I'd finally admitted that a relationship between Samuel and I would not work. That admission was making several other things clear. I loved Samuel, loved him with all my heart, but I had no desire to tie myself to him for the rest of my life. Even if there had been no Adam, I did not feel that way about him. So why had it taken me so long to admit it? Because Samuel needed me. In the 15 years more or less between the day I'd run away from him and last winter when I'd finally seen him again, something in Samuel had broken. Old werewolves are oddly fragile. Many of them go berserk and have to be killed. Others pine and starve themselves to death, and a starving werewolf is a very dangerous thing. Samuel still said and did all the right things, but sometimes it seemed to me that he was following a script, as if he'd think, this should bother me, or I should care about that, and he'd react, but it was a little off or too late. And when I was Coyote, her sharper instincts told me that he was not healthy. I was deathly afraid that if I told him I would not take him for a mate and he believed me, he would go off someplace and die. Despair and desperation made my response to his kiss a little wild. I couldn't lose Samuel. He pulled away from me, a hint of surprise in his eyes. He was a werewolf after all. Doubtless he'd caught some of the grief I felt. I reached up and touched his cheek. Sam, I said. He mattered to me, and I was going to lose him, either now or when I destroyed us both fighting the gentle, thorough care he would surround me with. His expression had been triumphant, despite his surprise, but it faded to something more tender when I said his name.
You know, you are the only one who calls me that, and only when you're feeling particularly mushy about me, he murmured. What are you thinking?
Samuel is way too smart sometimes. Go play, Sam. I pushed him away. I'll be fine. I hoped that I was right.
Okay, he said softly,
then ruined it by tossing Tim a smug grin.
We can talk later,
marking his territory in front of another male. I turned to Tim with an apologetic smile for Samuel's behavior that died as I saw the betrayed look on his face. He hid it quickly, but I knew what it was. Damn it all. I'd started out with an agenda, but the discussion had made me forget entirely what I was doing. Otherwise, I'd have been more careful. It's not often I got a chance to pull out my history degree and dust it off. But still, I should have realized that the discussion had meant a lot more to him than it had to me. He thought I'd been flirting when I'd just been enjoying myself. And people like Tim, awkward and unlikable by most standards, don't get flirted with much. They don't know how to tell when to take it seriously or not. If I'd been beautiful, maybe I'd have noticed sooner or been more careful, or Tim would have been more guarded. But my mongrel mix hadn't resulted as nicely for me as it had for Adam's second, Daryl, who was African, his father was a tribesman from Africa, and Chinese to my Anglo-Saxon and Native American. I have my mother's features, which look a little wrong in the brown and darker brown color scheme of my father. Tim wasn't dumb. Like most people who don't quite fit in, he'd probably learned in middle school that if a beautiful person paid too much attention to you, like as not, there was another motive. I'm not bad-looking, but I'm not beautiful. I can clean up pretty nicely, but mostly I don't bother. Tonight my clothes were clean, but I wasn't wearing any makeup and hadn't taken particular care when I braided my hair to keep it out of my face. And it had to have been obvious I'd been enjoying the conversation, to the point that I'd forgotten that I was supposed to be gathering information about Bright future. All this went through my head in the time it took him to clear his face of the hurt and anger I'd seen. But it didn't matter. I didn't have a clue on how to get out of this without hurting him, which he didn't deserve. I liked him, darn it. Once he got over himself, which took a little effort on my part, he was funny, smart, and willing to concede a point to me without arguing it into the ground, especially when I thought he was more right than wrong, which made him a better person than I was.
A bit possessive, isn't he?
He said. His voice was light, but his eyes were blank. There was a spill of dry cheese on the table, and I played with it a little. He's usually not bad, but we've known each other a long time. He knows when I'm having fun. There, I thought, a sop for his ego, if nothing else. I haven't had a debate like that since I got out of college. I could hardly explain that I hadn't flirted on purpose without embarrassing us both, so that was the closest I could come. He smiled a little, though it didn't go to his eyes.
Most of my friends wouldn't know Dutoit from Mallory.
Actually, I've never read Dutoit, probably the most famous of the medieval authors of Arthurian tales. I took a class in German medieval lit, and Dutoit was French. He shrugged, then shook his head and took a deep breath.
Look, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get all moody on you. There was this guy I know,
We weren't close or anything, but he was murdered yesterday. You don't expect someone you know to be murdered like that. Austin brought me here because he thought we both needed to get out.
You knew that guy, the one who was a guard at the reservation? I asked. I'd have to be careful now. I didn't think that my connection to Z would have been newsworthy, but I didn't want to lie either. I didn't want to hurt him any more than I already had. He nodded.
Even though he was pretty much a jerk, he didn't deserve killing.
I heard they caught some Fae they think did it, I said. Pretty scary stuff. It would bother anyone. He examined my face, then nodded.
Listen, he said. I probably ought to collect Austin and go. It's almost 11, and he has to leave for work at 6 tomorrow. But if you are interested, some friends and I are having a meeting Wednesday night at 6. Things are apt to be a bit odd this week. We usually met at O'Donnell's. But we do a lot of discussion about history and folklore. I think you'd enjoy it.
He hesitated, and then finished in a bit of a rush.
It's the local Citizens for a Bright Future chapter.
I sat back. I don't know.
We don't go out and bomb bars or anything, he said. We just talk and write to our congressmen.
He smiled suddenly, and it lit up his face.
And our congresswomen. A lot of it is research.
Isn't that a little bit of an odd fit for you? I asked. I mean, you know Welsh and obviously all sorts of folklore. Most of the people I know like that are...
Fairy lovers, he said matter-of-factly. They go to Nevada on vacation and hang out at the Fae bars and pay Fae hookers to make them believe for an hour or two that they aren't human either.
I raised my eyebrows. That's a little harsh, isn't it?
They're idiots, he said. Have you ever read the original Brothers Grimm? The Fae aren't big-eyed, gentle-souled gardeners or brownies who sacrifice themselves for the children in their care. They live in the forest in gingerbread houses and eat the children they lure in. They entice ships onto rocks and then drown the surviving sailors.
So, I thought, here was my chance. Was I going to investigate this group and see if they knew anything that would help Z? Or was I going to back out gracefully and avoid hurting this fragile and well-informed man? Z was my friend, and he was going to die unless someone did something. As far as I could tell, I was the only someone who was doing anything at all. Those are just stories, I said with just the right amount of hesitation.
So is the Bible, he said solemnly. So is every history book you read. Those fairy tales were passed down as a warning by people who could neither read nor write. People who wanted their children to understand that the Fae are dangerous.
There's never been a case of a Fae convicted of hurting any human, I said, repeating the official line. Not in all the years since they officially came out.
Good lawyers, he said truthfully. And suspicious suicides by Fae who could no longer bear being held so near cold iron bars.
He was persuasive, because he was right.
Look, he said, the Fae don't love humans. We are nothing to them. Until Christianity and good steel came along, we were short-lived playthings with a tendency to breed too fast. Afterward, we were short-lived dangerous playthings. They have power, Mercy, magic that can do things you wouldn't believe, but it's all there in the stories.
So why haven't they killed us? I asked. It wasn't really an idle question. I'd wondered about it for a long time. The Grey Lords, according to Z, were incredibly powerful. If Christianity and iron were such a bane to them, why weren't we all dead?
They need us, he said. The pure Fae do not breed easily, if at all. They need to intermarry in order to keep their race going.
He put both hands on the table.
They hate us for that most of all. They are proud and arrogant, and they hate us because they need us. And the minute they don't need us anymore, they will dispose of us like we dispose of cockroaches and mice.
We stared at each other, and he could see I believed him because he pulled a small notebook and a pen out of his back pocket and ripped out a sheet of paper.
We're holding the meeting at my place on Wednesday. This is the address. I think you ought to come.
He took my hand and put the piece of paper in it. As his hands folded around mine, I felt Samuel approach. His hand closed on my shoulder. I nodded at Tim. Thank you for keeping me company, I told him. This was an interesting evening. Thank you. Samuel's hand tightened on my shoulder before he released it completely. He stayed behind me as I walked out of the pizza place. He opened the passenger door of his car for me, then got in the driver's side. His silence was unlike him, and it worried me. I started to say something, but he held up a hand in a mute request for me to be quiet. He didn't seem angry, which actually surprised me after the display he put on for Tim. But he didn't start the car and drive off, either.
"I love you," he said finally, and not happily.
I know. My stomach tightened into knots, and I forgot all about Tim and Citizens for a Bright Future. I didn't want to do this now. I didn't want to do this ever.
"I love you, too."
My voice didn't sound any happier than his did. He stretched his neck, and I heard the vertebrae crack.
"So why aren't I tearing that little geeky bastard into pieces right now?"
I swallowed. Was this a trick question? Was there a right answer?
You don't seem too angry," I suggested.
He hit the dash of his very expensive car so fast that I didn't even really see his hand move. If his upholstery hadn't been leather, he'd have cracked it. I thought about saying something funny, but decided it wasn't quite the moment. I've learned a little something since I was 16.
"I guess I was mistaken," I said.
"Nope, haven't learned a thing." He turned his head slowly toward me, his eyes hard chips of ice.
"Are you laughing at me?"
I put my hand over my mouth, but I couldn't help it. My shoulders started to shake, because I suddenly knew the answer to his question. And that told me why it bothered him that he wasn't in a killing rage. Like me, Samuel had had a revelation tonight, and he wasn't happy about it.
"Sorry," I managed. "Sucks, doesn't it?"
"What?"
"You had this great plan. You'd weasel your way into my house and carefully seduce me. But you don't want to seduce me all that much. What you really want to do is cuddle, play, and tease."
I grinned at him, and he must have been able to smell the relief pouring off me.
"I'm not the love of your life. I'm your pack, and it's really ticking you off."
He said something really crude as he started the car, a nice old English word. I giggled, and he swore again. That he didn't really consider me his mate answered a lot of questions. And it told me that Bran, who was both the Marok and Samuel's father, didn't know everything, even if he and everyone else thought he did. Bran was the one who told me Samuel's wolf had decided I was his mate. He'd been wrong. I was going to rub his nose in it next time I saw him. Now I knew why Samuel had been able to restrain himself and not attack Adam all these months. I'd been crediting Samuel's control with a dash of the magic that comes from being more dominant than most other wolves on the planet. The real answer was that I wasn't Samuel's mate. And since he was more dominant than Adam, if he didn't want to fight, it would make it much easier for Adam to hold off. Samuel didn't want me any more than I wanted him. Not that way. Oh, the physical stuff was there, plenty of spark and fizzle, which was puzzling. "Hey, Sam," I asked, "why is it if you don't want me as a mate that when you kiss me, I go up in flames?" Why was it that after the first rush of relief was over, I was starting to feel miffed that he didn't actually want me as a mate?
"If I were human, the heat between us would be enough," he told me. "Damned wolf feels sorry for you and decided to step down."
Now that made no sense at all. "Excuse me?" He looked at me, and I realized he was still angry, his eyes glittering with icy fury. Samuel's wolf has snow-white eyes that are freaking scary in a human face.
"Why are you still angry?"
He pulled over on the shoulder of the highway and stared at the lights of Home Depot.
"Look, I know my father spends a lot of time trying to convince the new wolves that the human and wolf are two halves of a whole, but that's not really true. It's just easier to live with, and most of the time it's so close to being the truth that it doesn't matter. But we're different, the wolf and the human. We think differently."
"Okay," I said. I could kind of understand that. There were plenty of times when my coyote instincts fought against what I needed to do. He closed his eyes.
"When you were about 14, and I realized what a gift had been dropped in my lap, I showed you to the wolf, and he approved. All I had to do was convince you and myself."
He turned to look me squarely in the eyes, and he reached out and touched my face.
For a true mating, it isn't necessary for the human half to even like your mate. Look at my father. He despises his mate, but his wolf decided that he had been alone long enough.
He shrugged.
Maybe it was right, because when Charles's mother died, I thought my father would die right along with her.
Everyone knew how much Bran had loved his Indian mate. I think that was part of what made Leah, Bran's current mate, a little crazy.
So it is the wolf who mates, I said, carrying the man along for the ride whether he wants to or not?
He smiled.
Not quite that bad, except maybe in my father's case, though he's never said anything against Leah. He never would, nor permit anyone else to say anything against her in his hearing either. But we weren't talking about him.
So you set your wolf on me, I said, when I was 14.
Before anyone else could claim you. I was not the only old wolf in my father's pack, and 14 was not an uncommon age for marriage in older days. I couldn't chance a prior claim.
He rolled down the window to let the cooler night air flush the stuffy car. The noise of the traffic zipping past us increased dramatically.
I waited, he whispered. I knew you were too young, but...
He shook his head.
When you left, it was a just punishment. We both knew it, the wolf and I. But one moon, I found myself outside of Portland where the wolf had taken us. The need... We went all the way to Texas to make sure there was no chance of an accidental meeting. Without distance, I don't know that I could have let you leave.
So Bran had been right about Samuel after all. I couldn't bear the closed-off look on his face, and I put my hand over his. I'm sorry, I said.
You shouldn't be. It wasn't your fault.
His smile changed to a lopsided grin as his hand gripped mine almost painfully tight.
Usually things work out better. The wolf is patient and adaptable. Mostly he waits until your human half finds someone to love, and then he claims her, too. Sometimes years after they marry. I did it backward on purpose and got caught in the backlash. Not your fault. I knew better.
There's something really disturbing about finding out how little you really know about something you felt like you were an expert on. I grew up with wolves, and this was all news to me. But your wolf doesn't want me now? That came out pretty pathetic sounding. I didn't need his laugh to tell me so. Jerk, I said, poking him.
Here I thought you were above all that girl stuff, he said. You don't want me as your mate, Mercy, so why are you miffed that my wolf finally admitted defeat?
If he'd known how much that last statement told me about how hurt he was that I'd rejected him, I think he'd have bitten off his tongue. Was it better to talk about it, or just let it pass by? Hey, I may be a mechanic, and I may not use makeup very often, but I'm still a girl. It was time to talk it out. I nudged him. I love you. He crossed his arms over his chest and leaned sideways so he could see me without twisting his neck.
Yeah?
Yeah. And you're hot, and a terrific kisser. And if your father hadn't interfered, I'd have run away with you all those years ago. The smile slid off his face, and I couldn't tell what he was feeling at all. Not with my eyes or my nose, which is usually a better indicator. Maybe he was feeling as confused as I was. But I'm different now, Samuel. I've been taking care of myself too long to be happy letting anyone else do it. The girl you knew was sure that you would have made a place for her to belong, and you would have. I had to say this right. Instead, I made a place for myself, and the process changed me into who I am now. I'm not the kind of person you'd be happy with, Samuel.
I'm happy with you, he said stubbornly.
As a roommate, I told him, as a packmate, as a mate-mate, you'd be unhappy. He laughed then.
A mate-mate?
I waved an airy hand. You know what I mean.
And you're in love with Adam, he said quietly.
Then a little humor crept into his voice.
You'd better not flirt with that geek in front of Adam.
I raised my chin. I was not going to feel guilty. Nor did I understand my feelings for Adam well enough to discuss them tonight. And you're not in love with me. I realized something more, and it made me grin at Samuel. Wolf or not, you aren't in love with me. Otherwise,
You wouldn't have been getting such a charge out of teasing Adam all this time.
I was not teasing Adam, he said offended. I was courting you.
Nope, I said, settling back in my chair. You were tormenting Adam.
I was not.
He started the car and pulled out aggressively into the traffic. You're speeding, I told him smugly. He turned his head to say something to put me in my place, but just then the cop behind us lit up. We were almost home when he decided to quit being offended.
All right, he said, relaxing his hands on the steering wheel. All right.
I don't know what you were so mad about, I said. You didn't even get a ticket. 20 miles an hour over the speed limit, and all you got was a warning. Must be nice to be a doctor. Once a cop had recognized him, she'd been all kinds of nice. He'd apparently treated her brother after a car wreck. There are a couple of cops whose cars I take care of, I murmured. Maybe if I flirted with them, they'd...
I was not flirting with her, he ground out.
He wasn't usually so easy. I settled in for some real fun. She was certainly flirting with you, Dr. Cornick, I said, even though she hadn't been. Still,
she was not flirting with me either.
You're speeding again, he growled. I patted his leg. See, you didn't want to be stuck with me for a mate. He slowed as the highway dumped us in Kennewick and we had to travel on city streets for a while.
You are horrible, he said.
I smirked. You accused me of flirting with Tim. He snorted.
You were flirting. Just because I didn't take him apart doesn't mean you aren't fishing in dangerous waters, Mercy. If it had been Adam with you tonight, that boy would be feeding the fishes, or the wolves, and I am not kidding.
I patted his leg again and took a deep breath. I didn't mean to let it be a flirtation. I just got caught up in the conversation. I should have been more careful with a vulnerable boy like him.
He isn't a boy. If he's 5 years younger than you, I'd be surprised.
Some people are boys longer than others, I told him. And that boy and his friend were both in O'Donnell's house not too long before he was killed. I told Samuel the whole story, from the time Z picked me up until I'd taken the paper from Tim. If I left anything out, it was because I didn't think it was important. Except I didn't tell him that Austin Summers was probably the brother of one of the boys who beat up on Jesse. Samuel's temper might be easier than Adam's, but he'd kill both boys without a shred of remorse. In his world, you didn't beat up girls. I'd come up with a suitable punishment, but I didn't think anyone needed to die over it. Not as long as they quit bothering Jesse. That was the only thing I left out. Both Z and Uncle Mike had left me to my own devices in this investigation. Okay, they told me not to investigate, which amounted to the same thing. Proceeding without any help from the Fae made investigating riskier than it would have otherwise been, and Z was already mad at me for sharing what I had. More wouldn't make him any madder. The time for keeping their secret strictly to myself was over. If there was one thing I'd learned over the past few interesting, in the sense of the old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times, months, it was that when things started to get dangerous, it was important to have people who knew as much as you did. That way, when I stupidly got myself killed, someone would have a starting place to look for my murderer. By the time I was finished telling him everything, we were sitting in the living room drinking hot chocolate. The first thing Samuel said was,
"You have a real gift for getting into trouble, don't you? That was one thing I forgot when you left the pack."
"How is any of this my fault?" I asked hotly. He sighed.
"I don't know. Does it matter whose fault it is once you're sitting in the middle of the frying pan?"
He gave me a despairing look.
"And, as my father used to point out, you find your way into that frying pan way too often for it to be purely accidental."
I put aside the urge to defend myself. For over a decade I'd managed to keep to myself, living as a human on the fringe of werewolf society. And that only because, at the Maroc's request, Adam decided to interfere with my life even before he built a house behind mine. It was Adam's trouble that had started everything. Then I'd owed the vampires for helping me with Adam's problems. Clearing that up had left me indebted to the Fae. But I was tired. I had to get up and work tomorrow,
and if I started explaining myself, it would be hours before we got back to a useful discussion. So, finding myself in the frying pan once again, I came to you for advice, I prodded him. Like maybe you can tell me why neither Uncle Mike nor Z wanted to talk about the Seaman, or how there happened to be a forest and an ocean, a whole ocean, tucked neatly into a backyard and a bathroom. And if any of that could have something to do with O'Donnell's death. He looked at me. Oh, come on, I said. I saw your face when I told you about the funny things that happened in the res. You're Welsh, for heaven's sake. You know about the Fae. You're Indian, he said in a falsetto that I think was supposed to be an imitation of me. You know how to track animals and build fires with nothing but sticks and twigs. I gave him a haughty stare. Actually, I do. Charles, another Indian, taught me. He waved his hand at me. I recognized the gesture as one of mine. Then he laughed. All right, all right. But I'm not an expert on the Fae just because I'm Welsh. So explain the aha expression on your face when I told you about the forest. If you went underhill, you just confirmed one of Da's theories about what the Fae are doing with their reservations.
What do you mean?
When the Fae first proposed that the government put them on reservations, my father told me he thought that they might be trying to set up territories, like they once had in Great Britain and parts of Europe before the Christians came and started ruining their places of power by building chapels and cathedrals. The Fae didn't value their anchors in this world because their magic worked so much better underhill. They didn't defend their places until it was too late. Da believes the last gate to Underhill disappeared in the middle of the 16th century, cutting them off from a great deal of their power.
So they've made new anchors, I said.
And found Underhill again.
He shrugged.
As for not talking about the Sea Fae, well, if he were dangerous and powerful, you're not supposed to speak about things like that or name them. It may attract their attention.
I thought about it a moment. I can see why they'd want to keep it quiet if they found some way to regain some of their power. So does it have anything to do with figuring out who killed O'Donnell? Did he find out about it, or was he stealing? And if so, what did he steal? He gave me a considering look.
You're still trying to find the killer, even though Z is being a bastard?
What would you do if, in order to defend you from some trumped-up charge, I told a lawyer that you were the Morak's son? He raised his eyebrows.
Surely telling her that there were killings in the reservation doesn't compare.
I shrugged unhappily. I don't know. I should have checked with him or with Uncle Mike before I told anyone anything. He frowned at me, but didn't argue anymore. Hey, I said with a sigh, since we're friends and pack now instead of potential mates, do you suppose you could loan me enough to pay Z what I owe him for the garage? Z didn't make threats. If he told his lawyer to tell me that he expected repayment, he was serious. I can pay you back on the same schedule I was paying him. That will get you paid off with interest in about 10 years.
I'm sure we can arrange something, Samuel said kindly, as if he understood that my change of subject was because I couldn't stand to talk about Z and my stupidity anymore. You've got a pretty solid line of credit with me, and Da, for that matter, whose pockets are a lot deeper. You look beat. Why don't you go to sleep?
All right, I said. Sleep sounded good. I stood up and groaned as the thigh muscle I'd abused at karate practice yesterday made its protest.
I'm going out for a minute or two, he said a little too casually, and I stopped walking toward my bedroom.
Oh, no, you're not. His eyebrows met his hairline.
What?
You are not going to tell Adam that I'm his for the taking.
Mercy.
He stood up, strode over to me, and kissed me on the forehead.
You can't do a damn thing about what I do or don't do. It's between me and Adam.
He left, closing the door gently behind him, leaving me with the sudden, frightening knowledge that I'd just lost my best defense against Adam. Chapter 8 My bedroom was dark, but I didn't bother to turn on the light. I had worse things to worry about than the dark. I headed for the bathroom and took a hot shower. By the time the water had cooled and I got out, I knew a couple of things. First,
I was going to have just a little time before I had to face Adam. Otherwise, he'd already have been waiting for me, and my bedroom was empty. Second, I couldn't do anything about Adam or Z until tomorrow, so I might as well go to sleep. I combed out my hair and blow-dried it until it was only damp. Then I braided it so I could comb it out in the morning. I pulled back my covers, knocking the stick that had been resting on top of them to the ground. Before Samuel moved in, I used to sleep without covers in the summer. But he kept the air conditioning turned down until there was a real chill in the air, especially at night. I climbed into bed, pulled the covers up under my chin, and closed my eyes. Why was there a stick on my bed? I sat up and looked at the walking stick lying on the floor. Even in the dark, I knew it was the same stick I'd found at O'Donnell's. Careful not to step on it, I got out of bed and turned on the light. The gray, twisty wood lay innocuously on the floor on top of a gray sock and a dirty t-shirt. I crouched down and touched it gingerly. The wood lay hard and cool under my fingertips, without the wash of magic it had held in O'Donnell's house. For a moment, it felt like any other stick. Then a faint trace of magic pulsed and disappeared. I searched out my cell phone and called the number Uncle Mike had been calling me from. It rang a long time before someone picked it up. "Uncle Mike's," a not-so-cheerful stranger's voice answered, barely understandable amid a cacophony of heavy metal music, voices, and a sudden loud crash, as if someone had dropped a stack of dishes.
"Merde, clean it up! What do you want?"
I assumed that only the last sentence was directed at me.
"Is Uncle Mike there?" I asked. "Tell him it's Mercy and that I have something he might be interested in."
"Hold on."
Someone barked out a few sharp words in French and then yelled,
"Uncle Mike, phone!"
Someone shouted,
"Get the troll out of here!"
Followed by someone with a very deep voice muttering,
"I'd like to see you try to get this troll out of here. I'll eat your face and spit out your teeth."
Then Uncle Mike's cheerful Irish voice said,
"This is Uncle Mike. May I help you?"
"I don't know," I answered. "I've got a certain walking stick that someone left on my bed tonight."
"Do you now?" he said very quietly. "Do you?"
"What should I do with it?" I asked.
"Whatever it will allow you to do," he said in an odd tone.
Then he cleared his voice and sounded his usual amused self again.
"No, I know what you're asking. I think I'll give someone a call and see what they'd like. Probably they'll come and get it this time, too. It's too late for you to be a-waiting for them to come calling. Why don't you put it outside? Just lean it against your house. It'll come to no harm if no one collects it. And if they do, well, then they'll not be disturbing you or the wolf, eh?"
"You're sure?"
"Aye, lass. Now I've got a troll to deal with. Why don't you put it outside? Just lean it against your house. It'll come to no harm if no one collects it. And if they do, well, then they'll not be disturbing you or the wolf, eh?"
"You're sure?"
"Aye, lass. Now I've got a troll to deal with. Put it outside."
He hung up. I put my clothes back on and took the stick outside. Samuel wasn't back yet, and the lights were still on at Adam's house. I stared at the walking stick for a few minutes, wondering who had put it on my bed and what they wanted. Finally, I leaned it against the mobile home's new siding and went back to bed. The stick was gone and Samuel was asleep when I got up the next morning. I almost woke him up to see what he'd told Adam or if he'd noticed who'd gotten the stick, but as an emergency room doctor, his hours could be pretty brutal. If my staring at him hadn't woken him up, then he needed his sleep. I'd find out what had happened soon enough. Adam's SUV was waiting next to the front door of my office when I drove up. I parked as far from it as I could, on the far side of the parking lot, which was where I usually parked. He got out when I drove up and was leaning against his door when I came up to him. I've never seen a werewolf that was out of shape or fat. The wolf is too restless for that. Even so, Adam was a step harder, though not bulky. His coloring was a bit lighter than mine, which still left him with a deep tan and dark brown hair that he kept trimmed just a little longer than military standards. His wide cheekbones made his mouth look a little narrow, but that didn't detract from his beauty. He didn't look like a Greek god, but but if there were Slavic gods, he'd be in strong contention. Right now, that narrow mouth was flattened into a grim line. I approached a little warily and wished I knew what Samuel had told him. I started to say something when I noticed that there was something different about the door. My deadbolt was still there, but next to it was a new black keypad. He waited in silence as I checked out the shiny silver buttons. I crossed my arms and turned back to him. After a few minutes, Adam gave me a half-smile of appreciation, though his eyes were too intent to carry off real amusement.
"You complained about the guards," he explained.
"So why did you set up an alarm without asking me?" I asked stiffly.
"It's not just an alarm," he told me, the smile gone as if it had never been there. "Security is my bread and butter. There are cameras in the lot and inside your garage, too."
I didn't ask him how he'd gotten in. As he said, security was his business. "Don't you usually work on government contracts and things a little more important than a VW shop? I suppose someone might break in and steal all the money in the safe, maybe $500 if they're lucky. Or maybe they'll steal a transmission for their 72 Beetle. What do you think?" He didn't bother to answer my sarcastic question.
"If you open the door without using the key code, a physical alarm will sound, and one of my people will be tagged that the alarm has gone off."
He spoke in a rapid, no-nonsense voice, as if I hadn't said anything.
"You have 2 minutes to reset it. If you do, my people will call your shop number to confirm it was you or Gabriel who reset it. If you don't reset it, they'll notify both the police and me."
He paused as if waiting for a response, so I raised an eyebrow. Werewolves are pushy. I've had a long time to get used to it, but I didn't have to like it.
"The key code is 4 numbers, he said. "If you punch in Jesse's birthday, month-month, day-day, it deactivates the alarm."
He didn't ask if I knew her birthday, which I did.
"If you punch in your birthday, it will alert my people and they'll call me, and I'll assume you're in the kind of trouble you don't want the police to attend."
I gritted my teeth. "I don't need a security system."
"There are cameras," he said, ignoring my words. 5 in the lot, 4 in your shop, and 2 in the office. From 6 at night until 6 in the morning, the cameras are on motion sensors and will only record when there's something moving. From 6 in the morning to 6 at night, the cameras are off, though I can change that for you if you'd like. The cameras record onto DVDs. You should change them out every week. I'll send someone over this afternoon to show you and Gabriel how that all works.
You can send them over to take it out, I told him.
Mercedes, he said, I'm not happy with you right now. Don't push me.
What did he have to be unhappy with me about?
Well, isn't that just convenient, I snapped. I'm not happy with you either. I don't need this.
I waved my hand to take in the cameras and keypad. He pushed himself off his SUV and stalked over to me. I knew he wasn't angry enough to hurt me, but I still backed up until I hit the outer wall of the garage. He put one hand on either side of me and leaned in until I could feel his breath on my face. No one could ever say that Adam didn't know how to intimidate people.
"Maybe I'm mistaken," he began coolly. "Perhaps Samuel was misinformed and you aren't engaged in investigating the Fae without their cooperation or the approval of either Z or Uncle Mike, who might otherwise be reasonably expected to keep an eye out for you."
The warmth of his body shouldn't have felt good. He was angry, and every muscle was tense. It was like being leaned on by a very heavy, warm brick. A sexy brick.
"Perhaps, Mercedes," he bit out in a voice like ice, "you didn't set out last night to join up with Bright Future, a group that has been tied into enough violent incidents that the Fae, who are watching you, are going to be somewhat concerned, especially since you have ferreted out a number of things they'd rather be kept secret. I'm sure they'll be extremely happy when they find out you've told the son of the Maroc everything you know about the reservation that you were supposed to keep secret."
The coolness was gone from his voice by the time he'd finished, and he was all but snarling in my face.
I said. "The Fae aren't exactly cooperative at the best of times, but even they just might hesitate to do something to you if Samuel or I show up. I trust you to be able to survive until any one of us gets here."
He leaned down and kissed me forcefully once, a quick kiss that was over almost before it began, possessive and almost punitive. Nothing that should have sent my pulse racing.
And don't think I've forgotten that the vampires have a good reason not to be happy with you, too.
Then he kissed me again. As soon as his lips touched mine the second time, I knew that Samuel, in addition to telling Adam everything I told him last night, had also informed Adam that he was no longer interested in being my mate. I hadn't realized how much restraint Adam had been using until it was gone. When he pulled back, his face was flushed, and he was breathing as hard as I was. He reached over and punched in four numbers with his left hand.
There's an instruction booklet if you'd like to read it next to your cash register. Otherwise, my man will answer any questions you have when he comes.
His voice was too deep, and I knew he was a hair's breadth away from losing control. When he pushed away and climbed back into his SUV, I should have been relieved. I stayed where I was, leaning against the building, until I could no longer hear his engine. If he'd wanted to take me right then and there, I would have let him. I'd have done anything for his touch, anything to please him. Adam scared me more than the vampires, more than the Fae, because Adam could steal more from me than my life. Adam was the only alpha I'd ever been around, including the Marak himself, who could make me do his bidding against my will. It took me 3 tries before I was able to slide the key into the deadbolt. Monday was my busiest day, and this was no exception. It might be Labor Day, but my clients knew I was usually unofficially open on most Saturdays and holidays. Adam's security man, who was not one of the wolves, came in shortly after lunch. He showed Gabriel and me how to change out the DVDs.
"These are better than the tapes," he told me with more childlike enthusiasm than I expected out of a 50-year-old man with marine tattoos on his arms. "People don't usually change tapes often enough, so the saved footage is too grainy to be much help, or else they record over an important incident without realizing it. DVDs are better. These can't be written over. When they fill up, they'll automatically switch to a secondary disc. Since you're only activating them when you are not here, they probably won't fill the first disc in a week. So you just change them once a week. Most people do it on Monday or Friday. Then you store them for a few months before you throw them out. If something happens to your system here, the boss is recording remotely as well."
He obviously loved his job. After some additional instructions and a little bit of a sales pitch to make sure we were happy with what we had, Adam's man left with a cheery wave.
"Don't worry," Gabriel told me. "I'll change them for you."
He'd been as happy to play with the new toys as the tech had been. "Thanks," I told him sourly, unhappy about the boss is recording remotely part.
"You do that. I'll go take my temper out on that Passat's shift linkage problem."
When there was a lull in customers about 2, Gabriel came back to the garage. I was teaching him a little here and there. He was going on to college rather than becoming a mechanic, but he wanted to learn.
"So, for a person who just shelled out a lot of money for a security system, you don't seem too happy," he said. "Is there some trouble I should know about?"
I pushed a strand of hair out of my eyes, doubtlessly leaving a trail of the sludge that covered every inch of the 30-year-old engine I was working on, and had gotten a good start on covering every inch of me, too. "Not much trouble that you need to worry about," I told him after a moment. "If I thought there'd be a problem, I'd have warned you. Mostly, it's just Adam overreacting." And it was overreacting, I decided after thinking things over all morning. Only a moron would believe that I was joining Bright Future in order to protest the Fae. And somehow, I was pretty sure that stupid Fae didn't last long. If they talked to Uncle Mike, or Z, even if he was still angry, they'd know that I was still trying to clear Z. I might know a few things that made the Fae uncomfortable, but if they wanted me dead for it, I'd already be dead. Gabriel whistled.
"Jesse's father installed the whole security system without asking you? I guess that's pretty aggressive."
He gave me a concerned look.
"I like him, Mercy, but if he's stalking you..."
"No." He'd go away if I told him to. "He feels he has reason." I sighed. Things just got more and more complicated. I couldn't involve Gabriel in this mess.
"Something to do with Z's arrest?"
Gabriel laughed at my look.
"Jesse warned me yesterday that you'd be preoccupied. Z didn't do it, of course."
The confidence in his voice showed how innocent Gabriel still was. It would never occur to him that the only reason Z hadn't killed O'Donnell was because someone else had gotten there first. "Adam's afraid I'm stirring up a hornet's nest," I said. "And he's probably right." I wasn't really mad about the security system. It was more than I could afford, and it was a good idea. I always get angry when I'm afraid, and Adam terrified me. When he was around, it was all I could do not to follow him around and wait for orders like a good sheepdog. But I didn't want to be a sheepdog. Nor, to his credit, did Adam want me to be one, which was something I didn't need to tell Gabriel. "I'm sorry to be such a grouch. I'm worried about Z, and the security system gave me something to fuss about." "All right," Gabriel said. "Did you come back to help me with this engine, or just to talk?" Gabriel looked at the car I was working on. "There's an engine in there?" "Somewhere," I sighed. "Go do some paperwork. I'll call you in if I need a second hand, but there's no reason for both of us to get dirty if I don't need you."
"I don't mind," he said.
He never complained about work, no matter what I asked him to do. "It's all right. I can get this." My cell phone rang about 15 minutes later, but my hands were too greasy to pick it up, so I let it take a message while I worked on cleaning up the engine well enough that I could figure out where all the oil was leaking from. It was almost quitting time, and I'd already sent Gabriel home, when Tony walked into the open garage bay.
"Hey, Mercy," he said.
Tony is half Italian, half Venezuelan, and all whatever he decides to be for the moment. He does most of his work undercover, because he's a chameleon. He'd worked a stint in Kennewick High School posing as a student 10 or 15 years younger. And Gabriel, who knew Tony pretty well because Gabriel's mother worked as a police dispatcher, hadn't recognized him. Today, Tony was all cop. The controlled expression on his face meant he was here on business. And he had company. A tall woman in jeans and a t-shirt had one hand tucked under his elbow, and the other holding firmly to the leather harness of a golden retriever. Dogs are sometimes troublesome for me. I suppose they smell the coyote, but retrievers are too friendly and cheerful to be a problem. It wagged its tail at me and gave a soft woof. The woman's hair was seal brown and hung in soft curls to just below her shoulders. Her face was unremarkable, except for the opaque glasses. She was blind, and she was Fay. Guess what Fay I'd run into lately that was blind? She didn't look like someone who could turn into a crow, but then I didn't look much like a coyote either. I waited for the sense of power I'd sensed from the crow to sweep over me, but nothing happened. To all of my senses, she was just what she appeared to be. I wiped the sweat off my forehead onto the shoulder of my work overalls. "Hey, Tony, what's up?"
"Mercedes Thompson, I'd like you to meet Dr. Stacy Altman from the University of Oregon's Folklore Department. She is consulting with us on this case. Dr. Altman, this is Mercedes Thompson, who would doubtless shake your hand, except hers is covered in grease."
"Nice to meet you."
"Again."
"Ms. Thompson," she said. "I asked Tony if he would introduce us." She patted his arm when she said his name. "I understand you don't think the Fay the police are holding is guilty, though he had motive, means, and opportunity, and he was found next to the freshly killed dead body." I pursed my lips. I wasn't sure what her game was, but I wasn't going to let her railroad Z.
"That's right. I heard it from the Fay who was with him at the time. Z is not incompetent. If he'd killed O'Donnell, no one would have known it."
"The police surprised him." Her voice was cool and precise without a trace of accent. "A neighbor heard fighting and called the police." I raised an eyebrow.
"If it had been Z, they would have heard nothing. And if they had, Z would have been gone long before the police showed up. Z doesn't make stupid mistakes."
"Actually," Tony told me with a small smile, "the neighbor who called said he saw the vehicle Z was driving pull up to the house after he called the police, having heard someone scream."
The doctor, who was a gray lord, hadn't known about the neighbor before he told us both. I saw her lips tighten in anger. Tony must not like her, since he'd never play a trick like that on someone he liked.
So why are you trying so hard to pin this on Z? I asked her. Isn't it up to the police to find the guilty party?
Why are you trying so hard to defend him? She countered. Because he used to be your friend. He doesn't appear to be appreciative of your efforts.
Because he didn't do it.